Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for
welcome back.
Train,
us I like this song. It's a good one. We're talking with J.W. Walker, who is the president and co-founder of Gays Against Guns. And we were talking about, you know, kind of what they advocate for. And it's you know, unlike the AIDS epidemic and COVID and all that kind of stuff, the one thing that kind of stands in the way is how people interpret that right to bear arms in the Constitution. You know, and I think, you know, we can talk about that. You know, I am a gun owner. I don't feel the need to have military grade weapons in my home. But I you know, and I think advocating for common sense gun laws is just that. It's common sense. And I do want to talk with Jay about, you know, the stories that you've heard, that he's heard. You know, be it in school or the Pulse nightclub shooting, you know, in that world, you meet people who were there. And so, you know, I'd like to hear from you, Jay. Like, what I would like to hear a story, some stories of things and of people that have impacted you during this journey that you've taken.
Yes. I'll give you one of the most impactful ones is our member of Gays Against Guns, who also works with other gun violence prevention groups, Antonius Wirajada. And he lives here in New York. He is an immigrant, but legal and a citizen. He was just randomly shot. He was walking on a beautiful sunny day in Brooklyn one day, and a man tried to shoot a pregnant woman, his romantic partner.
Oh my God.
And shot her, but also shot Antonius. And he was shot in his chest. He happened to be shot right in front of a local barber shop. The barber ran out and, you know, started applying pressure to his wounds and tried to talk to him. And you know, someone called 911, and the police and paramedics arrived. And when the police arrived at where Antonius was, they immediately became aggressive with this barber. This barber happened to be a black man. And the barber explained, "I'm putting pressure to his wound. He's been shot. Wait until the paramedics get here, and then I'll move aside." And they literally started to manhandle him before they realized the gravity. Fortunately, Antonius survived, obviously. And he stayed in contact with that barber who saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, the barber moved back down to North Carolina, I believe, where he had family. And Antonius, you know, stayed in contact with them. And once Antonius tried to reach out to him and didn't get a response, and he continued trying to reach out and didn't hear anything back. And he had somehow managed to contact this barber's brother and found out that the barber, who had committed no crime, was in the wrong place in the wrong time and was shot to death by police.
Oh my God.
You know, that sort of encapsulates a lot of the problems about guns in this country. And the way that gun violence intersects with a lot of the sort of the issues and the ills of society. You mentioned earlier that your last program had been about domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
And the presence of guns increases the fatality of domestic violence. The over-militarization of police,
mm-hmm,
and the racial attitudes of police that have developed over time, you know, increase the likelihood that a black person in a confrontation with police will lose their life. When you look at this boy that just shot up his school, he was taken alive. Dylan Roof, who shot up the Mother Emanuel Church, another young white teenager, he was taken alive. Meanwhile, Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old playing with a toy gun in a public park, not threatening anybody, not doing anything actually violent, just essentially playing with the toy, not even shooting it, gets killed by police. Guns just sort of infect the broader narrative of American history and in American society in a really, really troubling way. But they also serve to highlight some of the issues that we as a society are failing to deal with.
Yeah, it's interesting and it's tragic. And, you know, there's a clip of, I think it's John Stewart talking with a state legislator and was describing that, you know, guns are the number one cause of death for children.
For children.
More than cancer, more than anything else. But you don't want to do anything about that because that right shall not be infringed.
Meanwhile, they're passing all of these laws children can't go to drag, can't be in the presence of drag performers and transgender kids who want to play in the sport with the gender they identify with are somehow endangering young woman athletes and all of, you know, they constantly use this, it's a danger to the kids. What about the children? The children are in danger for things that actually don't actually endanger children at all. But the one thing that is responsible for more deaths of more children than anything else in this country, they are consistently blocking laws meant to address that.
Yeah, as we're talking with J.W. Walker, who's the co-founder and president of Gays Against Guns, I don't know, you know, I don't think that someone's ever thought twice about wearing a bulletproof backpack to a drag show. I guess that could be something I'm mistaken about. But, you know, and I saw a political cartoon, you know, and it's not a funny one, but it was a school with bullet holes ripped through it. And there was a sign out front that said, this school is protected from, risque books and drag queens or something. And it's like, that's it. That's totally, you know, what this, I mean, it's so irresponsible. I don't even know the words to really to say it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a tactic, right? It's a long-standing tactic to, you know, if you are trying to divide people against one another so they don't pay attention to the actual threat, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You throw something over there for them to pay attention to while you're robbing them blind, while you're not protecting them from gun violence, while, you know, all of these, while you're, you know, not making sure that people are safe from infectious diseases, you know, you put up X, Y, or Z as the scapegoat for any and all society ills, mm-hmm. while you're ignoring the actual societal ills.
Yeah, it's really shameful. And how do you toe that line? You know, here we are in Wisconsin, and I think I talked to you over the phone that, you know, every November we turn into like the fourth largest army in the country with people going to hunt and, you know, do sporting things. You know, I have my concealed carry license and I am a gun owner, but I think, you know, how do you talk to people that say, okay, I think guns that are regulated are okay. I think guns in the hands of, like, you know, law abiding citizens are okay. But, like, how do you, you know, AR-15s don't belong in someone's home. I mean, how do you further that discussion?
Well, yeah, you know, the interesting thing is that most of the common sense gun prevention legislation that our broad movement, our broad gun violence prevention movement support, are supported by the majority of gun owners. It's the, you know, even when they've done surveys of NRA members, and the NRA is responsible for most of the blockages against these, you know, common sense gun legislation. When they interview NRA members, they're in support of all of these things, of a universal background check, of an assault weapons ban, of making sure that guns don't get into the hands of people with domestic violence convictions or that have restraining orders against them for domestic violence. These are common, completely common sense, you know, gun violence prevention legislation, and the broad community supports them. And so, you know, we've always had a lot of gun owners that support our movement. And we chose the name Gays Against Guns because we like the acronym GAG. But
nice.
But the, you know, the,
sweet.
You know, the reality is that, you know, we recognize that in a country that has more guns in civilian hands than we have people, yeah, you know, guns are not going to get eradicated from this country anytime right. soon. It would be a ridiculous notion to even assume that any kind of activism in any kind of short term, medium term, or perhaps even long term would be able to do that. We have to recognize, we have to work within the world that we actually live in, not to try to get to a world that we want. And so, you know, we generally understand that, you know, there is a hunting culture in this country. We understand that in, you know, rural areas, often you're not just dealing with going out and hunting, you're often dealing with wild animals that can come onto right. your property and, you know, possibly, you know, be predators against you or your family or your pets. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we understand that. The reality, though, is that when you look at the history of what happened to the NRA morphed, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, from yeah. an organization that was a gun safety organization that was right. recognizing that people need to have guns to protect their property, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or to hunt or whatever. But the NRA existed to make sure that they were using them properly and that their kids were being trained in responsible gun use. And they had classes and camps and things like that to sort of help keep people safe. And sometime in the 70s and the 80s, they morphed into an advertising firm for firearms manufacturers. Yeah. Because right. as the American public became more urban, as you know, more and more, a larger and larger percentage of Americans lived in urban centers where they didn't have to worry about wild animals and maybe they weren't hunting as much, gun sales started going down. And the NRA repositioned itself with a lot of money from those firearms manufacturers to become something that would gin up interest in buying guns. And they used race, they used sexuality and gender, they used all of these sorts of hot button issues to divide people and make people feel that they needed to arm themselves for the coming civil war yeah. or against crime, or, you know, against whatever,
yeah,
in order to keep those gun sales up.
All the doom and gloom stuff that they so often do. And we have about 30 seconds left, and I want to just wrap it up here with J.W. Walker. What happens here in 15 seconds? What's next?
What's next is to keep doing what we're doing, because for the first time in 30 years in the current administration, we got the first piece of strong gun violence prevention legislation passed and signed into law. All of that work that activists have been doing got that done. And we're going to keep doing it into the next administration, provided that...
Good Lord willing, we don't make that mistake again.
After the coming election.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I want to thank you so very much for your time today. And I admire wholeheartedly what you do. And it's not easy, especially, I mean, that is with millions and millions of guns in this country, it's an uphill yeah. battle. But I thank you for fighting it.
Thank you so much, Mark, for having us on, and keep up the good work and having these important conversations with your communities there in Wisconsin.
Thank you so much, J.W. Walker, president, co-founder of Gays Against Guns. Please do stay in touch, and thank you so much. We'll see you on the other side for my thoughts.